Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
I hope so. And on the way to start our conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. 1-800-638-7781. Now, if you're a first or second time home buyer in Baltimore, there are lots of opportunities for you that they will help guide you to. 1-800-638-7781, the Maryland Mortgage Program. Over the weekend, Anthony, I was reading the New York Times, which I like to do every day and over the weekend, and there was a really interesting article in there about the Marriage Equality Act that passed in Maryland, and they had an article earlier in the week about especially the battle going on within the African-American community around churches and this vote and what it means and how complex it is. And one of the people quoted in the article, the one that was over the weekend, was Delegate Kiefer Mitchell from the 44th District here in Baltimore, where he talked about shortly about why he voted yes for marriage equality. And I wrote to him because I said, Kiefer, you know, you've facing a lot of opposition inside your district over this issue, but you stood up. Why did you stand up and vote this way? And rather than saying his words for him, I invited him to come on the show today because I was really curious to hear what he had to say. And Kiefer, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to be here.
Hey there.
So, Kiefer, talk about that. I mean, what was it that, I mean, because clearly I know you've had a lot of messages and push from the other side saying don't vote this way.
Right. And I did receive that. And I received just as much last year when I was one of the co-sponsors of the legislation, and we weren't successful last year. And then this year, obviously, the governor put his full weight and of his office and was the lead sponsor and pushing the bill through. And for me, it just came down to issue of equality. And you know, there were those in my district that were against it. There were those who wanted civil unions, and there were those who said, you know, this needs to happen. But at the end of the day, you know, I just, you know, felt that, you know, with the background that I have in terms of my family fighting for equality, this was the right thing to do, and it was the right vote, and I look forward to it as it moves on.
Kiefer, this is Anthony McCarthy. I want to ask you something. I got emails from about 20 people over the course of the weekend. People were excited about what happened on Friday, and they're anticipating that the state Senate will follow suit and the governor will sign this law, make this law in the state of Maryland. But they're concerned about what will happen if it's immediately petitioned to referendum.
There is that concern. I think, you know, for us, you know, obviously last year, you know, you were there, Anthony, mm-hmm. Mark. You know, last year, you know, conventional wisdom was it's going to be tough in the Senate, sail through the House.
Well, that's right.
Obviously, politics usually turns conventional wisdom on its head, and, you know, it failed in the House, failed in committee. It was all the bumps we had in the Judiciary Committee, and it just continued to drag on where it didn't come up for a vote. You know, so we got over that big hurdle this time around in terms of the House, the vote totals really reflected that. I talked to veterans down here who really said that, you know, in all their years, in their experience, they've never seen a vote that close in the House of Delegates, where up until when the board was being lit up in terms of the votes, we still didn't know if we were going to have the 71 votes, and we ended up having 72, so it was very close margin. But when we go to referendum, you know, I think obviously the Human Rights Campaign and Equality Maryland did a great job down here. And I think while they were working down here, building the grassroots, I think they were also preparing to lay the groundwork for the field strategy and the political strategy when it goes to referendum.
There have been a lot of people. I'm opening the phones here at 410-319-8888. I mean, when we have these programs around marriage equality, the lines are drawn sometimes and very mixed opinions come across the airways. But one of the things people often say when they call in is that marriage equality is a way of obfuscating the issue that's important, which is the issue of poverty and what so many people live in this state and the school to prison pipeline, pardon me. and all those issues that face so many people in our communities, and that this marriage equality shouldn't be the front burner issue because there's so many more important things dealing with society, and that's part of what I know takes place in the community. So what are your thoughts on that, Kiefer?
Well, you know, I hear that all the time, but what I explain is that the Maryland General Assembly meets for 90 days. We've got 90 days to go through 2,000-some pieces of legislation that's proposed. The main thing is that we deal with is the budget, and then we have the gas tax that's coming up, that debate. We have the budget debate. We have Baltimore City school construction debate. All those are very important and are on the front burner. You know, every politician would love to control the media, but it was, you know, this issue, same-sex marriage, was a very hot topic. Confrontation and confrontation sells. So, you know, obviously the media was going to continue to play up the same-sex marriage vote. It was going to be a close vote, and it was a compelling story and an issue. And now that's behind us, at least on the House of Delegates. Now we're going to focus on the budget and school construction and jobs. So, you know, it's not that same-sex marriage was just on the front burner and we came down here just to do that job. We have a whole lot of issues that we're working on now that has been on the front burner and continues to be on the front burner.
One of the things, Delegate Mitchell, I was very curious. Someone mentioned on Facebook, they posted, you've gotten a lot of positive press. I haven't really heard very many criticisms of you. I know you got.
I hear the criticism.
I know you get a lot of opposition on this issue. But someone posted, and they asked a very simple question, and it's one of those rubber hit the road questions. Does Kiefer Mitchell believe that his marriage is equal to, or a same-sex marriage, is equal to the marriage he shares with his wife? Or is this a political vote or a political issue for Kiefer Mitchell?
I don't think it's a political issue for me. I have a record from 12 years on the council fighting for equality. I have 2 years, almost 2 years under my belt here in the House of Delegates, standing up for equality. And as I said on the floor, you know, I believe this was about equality as it relates to marriage relationships. Why should the rights and benefits of my wife and I be accounted more for those of same-sex marriages and as it relates to benefits? And quite frankly, they ought to be equal. You know, my wife, if something happens to our child, you know, one of us have the power to go in terms of visitation rights and hospital benefits and medical benefits. Same-sex couples ought to have the same thing.
Let me open the phones here. Some people may take umbrage at this, but I'll say it out because I was talking to my wife about this over the weekend when I told her that I talked to Kiefer, and we've been texting back and forth about coming on the air because I wanted to hear your thoughts as we talked to a bunch of people. And I, one of the things, Kiefer, I think that you – I have a feeling that you were hearing was that were the voices of your grandmother, your great-grandmother, and your great-uncle talking to you in your ear.
Yeah, and I mean, they're, you know, if someone asks, would they be supportive of same-sex marriage? And you know, I did a lot of thinking. You know, I called, you know, my great-grandma Lily Jackson passed away when I was 7 years old.
I remember her well.
Of her. And my grandfather passed away when I was 16 years old. But I would think that they would be standing for equality as it relates to families. And, you know, and same-sex marriage, you know, having the delegates that I talked to who had relatives, nieces and nephews in other states who were in same-sex relationships, and they were struggling with this. And they started to think, you know, what if they lived here in Maryland? And to me, it just came down to equality. And, you know, I look at all the work that members of my family did during the civil rights era in terms of fighting for the rights of others and to make sure they had equal rights. You know, that's what I was standing on.
Should we go to the phones here? 410-319-8888. Let's go. Some people are calling in here. Let's start with Andrea. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was calling in simply because I just don't understand why everyone is making such a big deal about it, especially like if you go to church and you're Christian. And I mean, get away from my car. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
You all right?
Sorry. Well, you guys already know I'm always working, and, yeah, it was kind of crazy. Okay. But I'm just saying, like, I understand how, like, a lot of, you know, me being African-American, I understand how people feel because, like, now I'm working, I'm driving around Baltimore City, and you're just like, wow, nobody really, you get the feeling like nobody cares about this town. But then, you know, so I do fight for that. But then also, too, I mean, why are you fighting? People, I just feel like people have a right to be in love and share a union with whoever they want, whether we like it or not. I mean, really, it shouldn't be any of your business. So, you know, that's just kind of my stand on it. You know, and like the people with the churches, I just don't understand that hatred because, you know, when I came up in church, it was kind of like, okay, you like it, you love it. That might not be my thing, but hey, you know, as a Christian, that core value is that we love and respect everyone.
And Andrew, you bring up a great point because, you know, one of the really compelling parts of this debate that took place two weeks ago at the hearing on Friday, you had two prominent African-American Baptist ministers from large congregations come and testify with Governor O'Malley. And, you know, and one of them from Baltimore, Dr. Dante Hickman, came up and said that he cannot wed, it goes against his belief to wed same-sex couples. But he made the point that he supports the legislation because you should not be denying the equality of families. And that was very compelling to hear from a Baptist minister with his credibility and the size of his congregation. You know, that, you know, a lot of the delegates really took that to heart. And, you know, I also, and in terms of Andrea, I'm not going to try to guess your age or anything, but it's a generational thing, I believe, also. The older ones that I've talked to were completely against same-sex marriage, and they referenced the religion and the Bible and all that. But as I talked to more younger people, they started to talk, like, what's the big deal? You know, how is that marriage going to affect my relationship? And those types of things.
And there are more and more people, I think, in the religious community who are saying what Reverend Hickman said, which was that I won't do this. It's against my belief system. But it doesn't mean that I should stop other people from doing what's in their belief.
Mark, I remember being in a church, and there was an unwed couple who had a child. And the pastor refused to baptize the child. And it caused such a stir because it really did make us stop for a moment and question what our true beliefs are. Now, ultimately, I will tell you that the pastor of our church when I was growing up ultimately baptized the child. But he did it after a very, in what I consider to be, even at my young age, a very invigorating conversation about who we were and what we believed. And he thought that that child deserved, regardless of the choices of his parents, that child deserved the blessing of the church. Hmm. And it was a power. And I think about those things. And that's why I admire people like Delegate Mitchell so much, because people think it's just a very easy thing to do. And it won. So, you know, it's done and it's over with. But a lot of these legislators made votes of courage because they're going to have to go home and they're going to face constituents who are bitterly opposed.
I mean, you look at Wade Cash. He's been down here for over 20 years, 30 years, a Republican. And who was redistricted into an even more conservative district. For him to come out and listen to that testimony, that he was voting no all the way up to the point where we had the vote in Judiciary and Health Government Operations Committee on that Wednesday last week. He was voting no in committee, and then decided that he had to make the right vote, and that was a yes vote. And, you know, to hear him speak on the floor, you could hear a pin drop because he was taking threats. He had state troopers surrounding him, and they had to lock his office and move him. He basically sequestered him up to the vote because of the threats he was getting, and not just political, but, you know, violent threats.
410-319-8888. That story I hadn't heard. Let's see here. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, first of all, Delegate Mitchell, don't underestimate those of us who will be going for the referendum, because I get the funny feeling that you all are going to lose the referendum on Election Day, and I'll be working my damnedest to make sure it is defeated in the referendum. Because I believe, for you all to compare their civil rights with the gay marriage issue is insulting to me as an African American, and it demeans me as an African American to have folks compare my civil rights to theirs. And I, for one, will be working hard to defeat this bill at the polls with everything I got and every cent I got if I can get it.
And that's obviously that's your right, and I just respectfully disagree. As I said, when we were debating the issue, I believe it's a civil rights issue, and no one group of people have a monopoly on civil rights. Anytime a state or a government denies a right or benefit to one group over another group, it is a civil right. And as I said, it's not comparable to the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s. You know, there is no comparison. That was African Americans being subjected to, you know, discrimination and violence, you know, and that it was the civil rights movement. However, this is a civil right.
Delegate, were you surprised that I read some comments made by Delegate, I think it's Veronica Turner.
She's in the hospital.
Yeah, she voted for the legislation. But she has said that she actually voted for it to take it to referendum because she believes it's been a distraction for the legislature and that a vote by the citizens at the end of the day is preferable because it will put the issue to rest.
Right. I think you're talking about Delegate Tiffany Alston.
Tiffany Alston. You're right. You're right, Delegate. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and she is very much committed. She's been a freshman along. She came in our class as a freshman. And, you know, she took a lot of criticism for her stance last year. She was on a co-sponsor.
That's right.
And changed her position and didn't want to vote on it. And she wanted to hear from her constituents, which she has every right to do. She made a very, very courageous vote in support of it because, you know, one of the things that as she was saying is that she wanted at least the ability for this issue to be voted on at referendum. And there was a lot of feeling among the supporters and also the opponents that this issue will go to the referendum. That's one of the quirks
sure
of the Maryland Constitution, that you get enough signatures. You saw it with the DREAM Act as it relates to in-state tuition in terms of the new technology used to get signatures that move forward. So you're seeing a new era in Maryland politics as we reload through a referendum to give people a chance.
Let us go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Greg in Owings Mills, you're on the air.
Hi,
Hi, Greg. Welcome.
My call. I joined in the conversation late, but I always had a question that I'm going to propose to you.
Sure.
Marriage in itself, is there a purpose to it? Because it's becoming confusing now. I once saw marriage as, one, a way to sustain life. Man and woman procreate, build family. And there's no denying that family is a good thing. So now that they're saying marriage can be done between man and man, woman and woman, what is the direction of marriage now?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that...
That's a good question. I don't think I'm qualified.
Well, I mean, I don't think...
You know, it's just funny. No one talks about it.
As I listen to
the news a lot,
yeah,
it doesn't sound like it should be a topic of marriage. I agree with the civil rights thing. And the, you know, if a man and a man are together, one man's in a hospital, the other man should be able to come see them there in love. That's okay. But what does that have to do with marriage?
Well, I guess I would ask a similar question. Is marriage only about procreation? Are there deeper ties that bind people together in matrimony that go beyond their ability? Because we know that there are... traditional marriages that cannot bear children, but they are strong and in love just like any other couple would be. So I think that the definition of marriage is expanding and it's actually becoming stronger. I think that when we this month, Mark, we saw so many compelling stories about interracial marriages that were denied here in Maryland and in Virginia and other places. People were arrested for daring to fall in love with each other and marry. And so I think that what we see happening is that marriage is expanding. The definition of marriage is expanding. I think it's only natural, like our Constitution has been expanded over hundreds of years. And this is one of those – I think you're asking a very genuine question.
Yes.
But I think it forces us to really push and understand what the definition of marriage is. I have an aunt, my favorite aunt, who could never bear a child. Her and my uncle have been together for almost 29 years. But they are no less a marriage than my parents were.
I think I'm going to sign Anthony up to be a marriage counselor.
Second career. But let's go then back to the phones here. I think that was a very – thank you so much for the call, Greg. And I think that it is something we should wrestle with. And I think what's happening is marriage over the millennium has really been redefined for thousands of years. And people I'm saying it was always this between man and woman and that was one-on-one. But that hasn't been the case. Clearly, polygamy was there. In some cultures, it was, you know, a woman taking many husbands. In other cultures, allowed same-sex marriage way back in different places. And Buddhists in Southeast Asia and some other cultures in Africa and Native America believed in a third sex. I mean, it's never been easy to deal with. And so we're wrestling with something brand new here, I think. And I think that and sometimes marriage is about shared property. Right? And the ability to...
It really is that basic in some instances.
So let's go back and see what other people are thinking, and let's go to Eric. You're on the air. Eric, you're on the air.
Yeah.
You're on the air, Eric. Turn on your radio so we can hear you.
I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
You're on the air.
Okay, fine.
Go ahead.
Yes, okay.
Do you
have a comment, Eric?
Oh, yes. I don't agree with things such marriage. And I grew up with around people that had other choices in sexuality, homosexual. And I've never had a problem with it. But when you start changing the way marriage is perceived, you keep saying young people don't seem to be okay with it. They're okay with it because they don't understand it. They're distracted about so many hundreds of things, so they're okay with it. Young people are okay with all types of things that aren't right. So here's what happens. If you want to get married, if you want to be with someone, fine. Get yourself a lawyer, a contract, go down to wherever you need to go, and put all of your concerns and property, just like people do with other marriage contracts or prenuptials, and just put everything in writing.
Yeah, but some people are doing this because they're in love and they want to be married.
Well, it's a civil union, a marriage, whatever you call it. Marriage is between, to me, a man and a woman.
Yes, right, right.
Okay, now you got your opinion, that's fine. But here's what happens. When you delegate the president and whoever, get on TV and talk about, yeah, you know, same-sex marriage is great, is great, is great, you know, give these people civil rights. You are changing, your opinion is going down to some of the youngest people on the planet. And when people 10 years old, 15 years old, start to decide and say, well, you know what, this same-sex marriage is great, you know, me and Tommy and me and Jane are just going to get together, and you send the wrong message, because after a while, we're just not going to have people that understand what a marriage is.
But again, we've been talking about many definitions of what marriage is. And Kiefer and Anthony?
You know, the caller brings up a point that has been debated about and really emphasized from the opposition of same-sex marriage, all at the hearings and the one-on-one conversations we've had. And, you know, Anthony brought up the good point earlier in terms of the various definitions of what marriage is. And I think that was one of the biggest hang-ups that people had regarding this piece of legislation, is that we were fundamentally changing and altering the traditional definition of what marriage is, that the universal definition of society recognizes what marriage is, and that is between a man
and a woman. And I go back to it was more about equality in terms of benefits and those who are in love that have the same rights and benefits as heterosexual couples.
And I think if we were to, and I think we don't give young people enough credit. I mean, they see and they are influenced by things in our homes, on television, around them in school every single day. And yet they make, many of them, most of them make the choice to do the right thing. And I think if we were just to look around the world where same-sex unions and same-sex marriage have been legal for almost a generation now in Spain, in the Netherlands, and all across certain
South Africa.
In South Africa. And those societies are still thriving. They haven't seen marriage fall apart. You know, the trouble, Mark, and as a minister, I was trained in marital counseling, but I will have to tell you, the problems we see happening in marriage right now in this country, when more than 50% of our marriages are ending in divorce, have very little to do with what the gay couple is doing next door or down the street. It has everything to do with what is not happening in those marriages, in those homes, right where people are. And so I think that I understand, and I'm one of those people, Mark, I've always been on the record as supporting same-sex marriage, but I have a strong understanding why there is a feeling in this country and in the African-American community where there is such uncertainty about this issue. And I respect people who hold that position. What I ask on both sides, I've heard some horrible, hateful, bitter rhetoric come from both sides on this issue. We will not progress and we will not become stronger as Marylanders and as human beings if we cannot listen to each other and respect each other's views. I watched Delegate Mitchell on the floor and it brought me to tears because he has such a way of, and I see his family, his uncles and his grandmother and all these people, I see them in him because he is so respectful, even of the people who are in opposition.
And that was one of the points. You know, people came to meet with me all last week, and a majority of them was those in, against.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the delegates, you know, they say, well, I only want to meet the people in my district. I met with everyone. I met with pastors from Prince George's County, Harford County, evangelicals from the Eastern Shore, and we talked. And I wanted to hear their side, and I wanted them to hear my side. But it was all very respectful and that nature. It gave them as much time as they wanted that in terms of talking. But, you know, again, what I was proud of, you know, not just in terms of the vote, but just the civility of this issue had on the floor, because it really could have come down to a lot of name calling, and it continued to have a very civil debate and respect. And like I said, now we move on to very weighty issues dealing with the budget and education and job creation, you know, for the next rest of the weeks.
So, Kevin, before we take a break here, we're going to switch subjects when we come back from this break and invite you all to continue calling in at 410-319-8888. And I know, Keith, you have to run. You have an engagement to go to.
Yes, we have the Maryland Nurses Association.
So you don't want to miss that.
The life of
but
a delegate.
Let me leave
and
you with this.
And it's Catholic night.
That's right. So you need to be down there. But let me just leave you with this thought as we go to break. The movie documentary's out about Mildred and Richard Loving, the couple in Virginia in 1957 who married across racial lines and were. They went after them and tried to put them in jail, and the Supreme Court finally decided 10 years later that they had a legal right to marry as a white man and a black woman. Although someone said to me over the weekend, if it had been a switch and a black man and a white woman, it probably would have gotten court. He probably would have been lynched. But a different set of stories. But this is what Mildred Loving said on the 10th anniversary of the death of her husband. Let me just read it to you because it resonated so deeply with me. She said, "Surrounded as I am by wonderful children and grandchildren, not a day goes by when I don't think of Richard and our love, our right to marry, and how much it meant to me to have that freedom to marry the person precious to me, even if others thought he was the wrong kind of person for me to marry. I believe all Americans, no matter their race, no matter their sex, no matter their sexual orientation, should have that same freedom to marry. Government has no business imposing some people's religious beliefs over others, especially if it denies people's civil rights. I am still not a political person, but I am proud that Richard's and my name is on the court case that helped reinforce the love, the commitment, the fairness, and the family that so many people, black or white, young or old, gay or straight, seek in life. I support the freedom to marry for all, That's what Loving, her name, L-O-V-I-N-G, and Loving are all about. I'll leave you with that.
Great.
Delegate Kiefer Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, guys. You guys have a wonderful evening.
You too,
you
man.
Too, Delegate.
And Anthony and I will be right back. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. And Anthony McCarthy's in the studio, too. I'm sorry, Anthony.
Oh, that's all right, brother.
support for WEAA is made possible by The Book Thing, 3001 Vineyard Lane in Baltimore. The Book Thing accepts donated books and dispenses them at no charge. The Book Thing has over 200,000 books in stock and gives away almost 20,000 books each week. Open Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. For more information, at bookthing.org. Or 410-662-5631. We're going to get right to the phones. Let me throw out a couple of things here that Anthony and I were talking about. One has to do with the people from the ESPN who got fired for saying there was a chink in the armor with Jeremy Lin. And I'm only chuckling because this guy got fired over a racist slur. But, you know, I'm going to throw it out here. I just went through a whole stuff about this guy's work who made the comment, Anthony Federico. What it turns out is that he says that almost every week.
And has been
saying. And has been saying that when somebody makes a mistake on the court, there's a chink in the armor on that team. It just means there's a loose part in the armor and where the team is. And I think that while I will doggedly fight racism in every corner that it comes out of and say, yeah, you should be fired for saying that stuff. In this case, I think it was like this overreaction, this poor guy. It wasn't a very thoughtful way to put it when he's thinking about who he's talking about, but you know, it wasn't like...
When I started reading about... I was incensed until I started reading the facts. And then I think you're right. I think there was an overreaction because Lin is this... He's become this...
phenom.
I mean, it is amazing how the energy that is being built around the marketing and the promotion of this incredible player. And you can't help but watch him. I watched him this weekend against Dallas, and I was just blown away at how good he is. And but the phrase chink in the armor, when you first hear it, I was just outraged. I'm like, why would they direct that at him like that? And it's right. Just racism. And then you find out this man has been saying this long before this player ever hit the airwaves like this and become this phenom. So I guess we're sensitive. We're a very sensitive society, and it makes sense. And he even said, you know what? It's over. He said, I accept that.
Lin said.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
He said, I accept that he had no malice. Well, it really doesn't matter because he lost his job.
But anyway, so another thing I was thinking about, that we talk about jobs in Baltimore a lot, right? And I'm going to throw this out, and just we can sit and throw it to our listeners, thinking what you think, Anthony. 410-319-8888. After this comment, we'll go right to the phones. Is that, and we're going to do a whole show on this, by the way, in the coming weeks, several shows, because I think it's that important. We've been battling over the school construction thing, right? And rebuilding Baltimore schools. It'll take $2.8 billion to rebuild the schools in Baltimore. Baltimore had the opportunity, and I really want to ask the mayor and the people this question, and the city council when they come on the air, had the opportunity to leverage the $60 million a year we spend on school construction and get over $1 billion in a bond that would immediately – $1 billion coming to Baltimore to rebuild the schools. Can you imagine what $1 billion would do in this city to rebuild the – how many people could be put to work? How many – you could get unions involved and train a lot of unemployed folks in our poorest neighborhoods to become the workers to rebuild the schools – and that rebuild stable families, giving people jobs with decent salaries. What it would do to our children's minds and hearts to see people working to put their schools in, so we care about the way your schools look like. That, and then the mayor said, it's a dangerous time to leverage money. Well, what? It's a dangerous time not to rebuild our schools. If we're already saying we're going to commit $60 million a year to the schools, what are we worrying about? We're going to pay the money back, right? Because we're going to use that money anyway for schools. And so Bill is coming out. I'm going to have them on the show, hopefully with the mayor's office and other people, saying $300 million is not acceptable. We need the billion. And I kind of understand that. I mean, we It would be – okay, I'm sorry.
No, I was only going to say that, you know, the mayor has gotten pretty far without me defending her. She has another plan. She has a plan that will involve revenue enhancements in the city, raising more dollars and using those dollars coupled with the money she already has committed to begin the process of refurbishing the schools. And she truly, according to her comments in The Sun and other comments I've made, believes that leveraging to get that huge of amount of money in the city and then be committed to paying that back would be a very difficult thing for the city of Baltimore. Now, that is what I've
grown to – Why would it be difficult?
That is what I've grown to understand from her position, that better tax and get those dollars through revenue than to leverage and get that bond. Now – I think Build, the ACLU, and others are going to make a very compelling case of why. Mark, the amazing thing, because you know I love politics, is that this is the first time that I've seen the CEO of our public school system publicly disagree with the chief executive, whether it was Sheila Dixon or right. Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. And he supports this bond. And so it would be very interesting to see how it plays out.
It would help turn the city around. It could fill. I don't know, I'm guessing here, but it could bring thousands of jobs to the city, people working on our schools for a multi-year project. It could be a critical change, and I think that the debate has to begin.
Oh yeah.
On that, and I'm open minded enough to hear. I really want to hear what the mayor really thinks and why she thinks this. And maybe her argument is super strong, and that's what it should be. But I think that this is a critical issue. Before we go, anything you want to add?
No, I think that's great.
We have an email came in. It's too late. It was for Kiefer from Dennis McIver. He wrote in, I want to say I've disagreed with Kiefer on issues repeatedly, but I commend him for his work this time. Sent in by Dennis the Cynic.
Dennis the Cynic.
Thank you, Dennis. Sorry we couldn't get it on the air I just got it right after we came back from break, where I would have read it to Delegate Mitchell. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Bernard in Baltimore County. You're on the air.
Yes. I've said this before. I'm a pretty liberal guy. But also I've said before, in a society, you have to have rules and regulations. Now, if we're going to cater to the gay community for same-sex marriage, how about polygamy? Suppose there's a group, shouldn't they be have the same type of rights because they believe or youngsters who are 19 want to drink? But you have rules and regulations that no, you got to be 21 to buy liquor. We don't recognize polygamy in this country. So I like I said, I'm pretty liberal. And not only that, of all the things that started the General Assembly with this year, is a gay marriage bill. Why not job bill?
Well, I mean, I think that they're not mutually exclusive, and I think that at all. I mean, I think that gay marriage or marriage equality has been in before the legislature every year. This is the year it picked up some momentum, like different bills pick up momentum different years. And I agree with you. I think there should be jobs bills that should be out there. I don't think that because some people of same sex get married, you're going to have polygamous marriage. I mean, some people who take the Bible fundamentally might believe in polygamous marriage because that's where written all through it. But I think that this has nothing. They're not mutually exclusive. I think that one's a civil right and one is another civil right for people to be able to have jobs and make a decent living in this community. I think we have to fight for that.
And I think that the caller is right in the sense that these issues are debated and laws are created to regulate them. That's why 19-year-olds don't drink. I think that's why we have the other prohibitions on polygamy and other arrangements. And in this case, there was a real vigorous conversation and debate around same-sex couples, consenting adults, making a decision to enter into the institution of marriage. And now it is predicted that within the next week, it will become or be well on its way to being the law of the state of Maryland.
And one of the ways the law passes, because it can't go into effect until January of 2013 which
right.
means the referendum, which I'm sure is going to come, will come first. And the battle between the end of the legislature and voting in November will be the battle over this, mm-hmm. as well as the Dream Act. But this will be a battle over whether this will pass in the state of Maryland. That's going to be
millions of dollars from inside the state and from outside the state will flow into Maryland on both sides of this issue.
Bernard, thank you. Hank, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, hey, Hank, you're on the air, man.
How are you?
How are you doing today, Mr. Steiner, Mr. Anthony?
Very well.
Great to
talk to you.
What I want to know is, even if she wasn't going to use the bond referendum, right, or the bond option, right, why doesn't she tell all of these people who are coming into town doing all of this remodeling and stuff like that, right, you have to put in a certain percentage towards our school system, or say, look, you have to hire a certain percentage of our minority black and white population who lives here in the city already. Right, she ain't looking out for us whatsoever, any kind of way. Right, I didn't vote for, and I'm not going to vote for any chance I get. Right, I really, really think that she's not looking out for anybody who doesn't have a certain salary. Period. That's just my belief.
All right,
thanks.
Well, Hank, always good to hear from you. Drive safe out there. But you know, I think I'm not so sure that. Any candidate that ran in that race or any other person who's been mayor of this city that I know of they've all been influenced by people with money and power,
without
all been
question.
Influenced by developers. I can think of one person who's not on some level or another. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying it is what it is, and people should fight against that. I think that's why we need those ethics laws strong in the city of Baltimore, which we don't have. They came out with the Skybox stories in the Sun. But, I think those have to be really looked at. I think that how politicians use Skyboxes and how money we take for what, I think we have to have very strict guidelines to keep the wedge between the power of wealthy corporations and the government apart.
And, Mark, I've been amazed at how people just kind of dismiss those conversations about the Skybox, about tickets, about events, concerts, and things that come to the city. But when you really scratch past the surface, it has everything to do with the influence that comes to bear and how a legislator or an elected official can say this corporation or this CEO, whether they have business before the city or not, has no influence on how I operate. It's a very tough call. I mean, I know these legislators. You know, I have very close relationships with many of these elected officials, and I know their integrity. But I also know that money can be a corrupting influence, whether they admit it or not. If someone's making huge contributions and comes to you and say, hey, I just need you to vote for this one bill. Just support this one bill. And how easy it is for people to compromise who they are.
Now, supposing you had a compromise. And supposing if the mayor or the governor or somebody had a skybox, that there was a rule. And the rule was, okay, the mayor or the governor, whoever else, has the right to invite X amount of people per game. But the other X amount of people are chosen by lottery or whatever to just be able to come to the mayor's skybox to see the game in luxury and schmooze with all the people with the power. Now,
you know, it's interesting. Full disclosure, Mark, you know, I worked for the mayor and not this current mayor. I've been in that box many times and have been invited by elected officials to other skyboxes and do go.
How come I ain't getting an invitation?
I'm not sure. I'm the corrupt. But it's amazing to me, Mark. That's why I made the comment I do. I can see where compromises are made very easily. And the biggest question that we ask are, do those skybox belong to the mayor of our city or do they belong to the people? They actually belong to the people of this
city.
They're
the citizens. They really do. Right.
And I will say also, it's a very small box. It can house up about 12 people, 15 people. I mean, it's a small box compared to the governor's box, which you could pit 30 or 40 people in.
Lots of people in that box.
Lots of folks in that box.
They are comfortable.
I've not been invited to the governor's box. I was invited under Governor Ehrlich, but not under this governor.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means.
410-319-8888. Carl, you're on the air. Hi, Carl, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes,
welcome.
We can.
Okay. Thank you for having this specific topic on the show today. I've been following this topic since, I believe it was 2000, back in California under Prop 22.
Oh, you're talking about marriage equality. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, marriage equality,
right.
Yeah. Now, my question is, I'm not very versed in the law, and I'm from California, living in Maryland, and I have been following the events that have been going on in California and the recent ruling in favor of one step ahead in same-sex marriage. Now, my question is, if, you know, this passes in Maryland, and then it goes to referendum, and people, you know, may end up putting it down by the vote. You know, they say, you know, we don't want same gender marriage in our state, like so many other states have passed recently in 2006 and 2004, 2008.
Right, right.
When this case goes to the Supreme Court, and let's just say that the Supreme Court actually rules in favor of same-sex marriage, what will then happen to all these states that passed referendums in their, you know, respective states? Are they all going to be null and void, or I guess that's my question.
Yes, they would be. I mean, if you're saying if a state passed a Marriage Equality Act and people voted against that act, and then the Supreme Court decided that it was legal, then those would be overturned. Correct.
So, do you think that that would create a big uproar in all these states that, you know, may have conservative people and
it might. It might. I mean, it might. I'm sure it would. But I now, even though people say don't dare kind of equate the two, and I'm not equating, but civil rights is a battle on many levels around over the world. And as a person who fought in the civil rights movement, went to jail and got beaten by the police, I'll say this:
right,
that there are a lot of people in the South and in this state of Maryland we live in who would love to have seen a referendum saying no, black folks cannot eat in this restaurant; they shouldn't be going to school with my children. The majority of people in a lot of states, probably including our own, would have voted no. We don't want an equal accommodations law. No, we don't want people going to school of racially mixed. I think that would so what the courts are supposed to do is uphold people's civil rights, Anthony.
And I was going to say, you know, the precursor to this passing the legislature and going to referendum here in the state of Maryland is, Mark, that a referendum on this issue has never passed. In every state where it was put to referendum, it has lost.
That's true.
And that's what, you know, I was emailing back and forth with folks this week, and they said, well, we wanted to go to referendum because every time a law has been passed and then it's been taken to referendum on same-sex issues, same-sex marriage, it fails in that state. And so it is quite possible that, I mean, what I guess I'm trying not to say is Maryland would have to go against a huge national trend for them to be successful, for the pro-same-sex marriage forces in this state to be successful.
But it's possible here. I mean, the polls
are— Oh, without question.
And
they're very close.
This could change a lot. So we'll see. I mean, it's a great question, Carl. Appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Mike in North Baltimore. You're on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, thanks. You know, the answer with this ethics thing is, you know, why now? With, you know, and I hate to pull this card up, but
yeah, go ahead.
Second black female mayor. Why now? Why not under O'Malley? Why not back to Schaefer and Hyman Pressman? I mean, the sweet deals those guys had would make your skin crawl now.
Mm.
But you know. I just, you know, every mayor has that privilege and perk. And, I mean, the son and Jane Miller, I mean, I was there listening when her and Dan Rogers held court on Hopkins Radio before Sheila was even indicted. And people calling and saying, you know, this is illegal. And they haven't gotten to that point with Stephanie Rawlins Blake. But the thing is, every mayor has a privilege, and it's not right, nor should it be right. But, I mean, you know, the son couldn't dig up a flower bed and find dirt, but all of a sudden, it and the journalism in this town is going to be turned into a journalistic weapon to find out why this mayor is so corrupt. You know, give me a break, and I'll listen to your comments off the air.
I don't think that I'm not clearly not saying that Stephanie Rawlins Blake is corrupt.
No, and I think that
but digging it up, just pulling it up and suggesting it, man. And I hear her talk of it on Jane Miller's report at night, and then I see it as a headline in the Sun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's too coincidental. It's too coincidental. And I'll let you guys talk.
Thank you, man. Anthony?
Well, I have always been uncomfortable, and I've said it on the air. There are a lot of people who are critical of the Sun. It's the only daily we have. I think that I'm so biased as I'm listening to myself. I really am biased. I think that there are perks that go along with being the mayor of the city of Baltimore. And it includes 24-hour security. It includes transportation. It includes those skyboxes. It includes – I mean, there are perks that go along with winning the office and serving the people. And I get really troubled when people start equating corruption to those perks.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that perks perks are important. I'm not saying that. But I say that there are things that go along with being mayor of this city. Kurt Smoke one time in an interview after he left City Hall, I asked him, what's been the most difficult part? And he said, you know what, Anthony, if I was being 100% honest, he said, it's driving myself everywhere. Because for those 12 years or however long he was our mayor, he didn't drive himself anywhere. He was driven everywhere he had to go. And so, I mean, I understand people having concern, but I think oftentimes, Mark, we have grown so cynical when it comes to politics and corruption, and we know it exists, and the influence that money and these big corporations have, more influence if we admit it than you or I will ever have or average citizens in this city will ever have. We can't pick up the phone. Well, maybe you can pick up the phone and call Stephanie Rawlings-Blake.
I can't pick up the phone. It's my call.
But I bet you a lot of CEOs in this country can call and get her on the phone.
My dear friend, Anthony McCarthy, thank you so much for coming
in
today.
Always great to be with you.
We've got to get this Monday rhythm getting back, man. It's slowly.
I feel it.
It's coming in. Come in. Good to have you here, man. Thank you
great
so much.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mark.
And listen to Anthony this Friday, of course, 5 p.m., 5 to 7 p.m. He always has an incredibly important show for all of you to listen to. On the way out of here, I remind you of a couple things, so don't throw me off the air just yet. Where is it? Where did it go? Here it is. Oh, yes. Marsha Jews is coming right behind me. Keep it moving. She'll be talking to Pat Chesimi, J. Wendell Gordon, and Ivan Bates about the situation in the city and nationally regarding incarceration laws and potholes related to this critical topic. So, and a call in from Congressman Cummings as well. So stay tuned for that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanet Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Just go to UrbaniteBaltimore.com. Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Aronson. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. We're engineered by Regis Tucker. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To this show again, podcast any repair shows, get information on our guests and what they're doing, visit us on the web at SteinerShow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.